Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 5, delivered on January 27, 2016. The title of this lecture is Financial and Ratio Analysis.
Today, Financial and Ratio Analysis. I caution as I begin this that, as I've said before, financial statements are prepared according to accounting principles. And so when we look at those, we are looking through a glass quite dark in terms of what we need to be able to study companies for various purposes. Excuse me. I'm going to be quite practical in some regards in this lecture, in the sense that I'm going to show you what you can use. Never mind, for homework and quizzes and tests, it's great to have this stuff so that you don't get the problems wrong, but there's more to it than that. And I'm going to introduce you to some what we call screens that are quite useful for investigating companies, what their performance level is, and then I'm going to show you where you can get original information about companies that's useful for a couple of reasons. One is, you're going to be in classes soon, if you haven't already, where you're going to have to do research on companies. I'm going to show you one of the resources that is the best for getting information about companies. Also, this is a place where you can investigate companies on your own and find out what you need to know if you want to have a job with that company or looking for an internship. In other words, this is a place where you can look at health of companies. I'm also going to do some old school stuff with you, and I'm going to start with that, and then I'm going to keep coming back to the old school stuff because there are some things that we as humans can do that all these incredible computers might not be so good at. And a part of that has to do with insight and intuition, looking at numbers and what they can tell us that is not just a calculation. We're just going to do some calculations today, and there are plenty of ratios in the textbook. All of the ratios that you'll need are right there for you. But sometimes you have to look beyond the ratios and ask yourself, what is this telling me? Or what is the basic information about a company telling me? I'm going to start with some screens from one of the sites that shows financial stuff, finance stuff. Is there some reason why I want a few more lights on there? Okay, I'm going to use Yahoo Finance to draw some current information about companies. And I'm going to show you some numbers and talk about how to interpret them. These will come back later in the course. One of the things that you'll see about the way I teach is I'll bring up a concept very quickly, early on. And then I'll kind of come back to it, well, here's a little more technical about it. And then finally, one last pass at it sometimes, here is the full story. But it certainly is good if you get exposed to it on a practical level first. This is Yahoo Finance, the main screen. We can see that in here, the overall market's performance, the Dow, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ are indices, sort of like aggregates of different types of company. The Dow that they're showing you, there are a number of Dow indices. This is the Dow 30, the 30 probably largest public companies on Earth, the monsters. Lower risk to a certain extent because they are so huge. Lower expected return. Funny how that works, at least in general. The S&P 500, 500 of the largest companies, mid-cap to large companies. You will probably work for a company that is in the S&P 500 or is at least dependent upon S&P 500 companies. They're large. If you remember from your economics class, these companies exist in what's called monopolistic competition. They fight fiercely for market share. They're battling all the time, innovation, product differentiation, the whole nine yards. In the real world, taking the theory out of the economics, microeconomics textbook and putting it into the practice every day, day in and day out. They use marketing. What the heck? Oh, they use marketing and all of that. Okay, and then the NASDAQ, small cap. There are a few very big companies in the NASDAQ, but for the most part, this is small companies. Now, as you can see, the Dow and the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ were all down for the day. Interestingly, the Dow was down a little more than the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ was whacked pretty hard. Know this, numbers, dollars don't really matter a whole lot in analysis. Percentage changes are what matter. Look, if a stock goes up by a dollar, if that's a stock that was $10, that's a lot different from if the stock was $100 and it went up a dollar. So percentages are much more important to us. But now, to start the ball rolling, I'm going to pull up the screens for one company, just so we can look at some of the numbers and begin to think about what and begin to talk about what these numbers tell us. And I'll use a big retailer, TGT. That's its trading symbol. You got to watch it. When you write down just a company name, sometimes there is more than one company that has a name. And sometimes a company has different subsidiaries all have the same name. So you want to make sure you got the right company, and the trading symbol is probably the best way to do it. Okay, here's, and this company is, of course, what is this company? No, Target. Don't be Decatur. That's so Target. Target, no. Okay. The previous close was $7.44. That's $7.44. Now, in trading, you would buy not one share. You would be stupid to buy one share of stock. Normally, you will buy a round lot. That's 100 shares. If you buy anything other than a round lot, a multiple of a round lot, you're buying what's called an odd lot, and you'll pay more for it. So normally, it would be you would buy a round lot of these, which would cost you about just north of seven. At the close yesterday, it would cost just north of $70. $7,000. Okay, when it opened, Madam, what do you see? What happened when it opened? From the time that it closed yesterday to the time it opened today, what happened? Look at it. It did not. It closed at 7044 and it opened at 721. So, what does that mean? It closed yesterday at 7:44. This is not rocket science, and it opened this morning at 7:21. So it, overnight, there was some selling pressure, and so when it opened on a downstroke. Okay. Now, bid and ask. Normally, I've always kind of had a thing of wondering about Target, in the sense that the bid and ask spread normally isn't as wide as this. The bid is what you're going to sell it for. The ask is what you're going to buy it for. So you'd sell this off at just a little 3 pennies under 68, and you would buy shares at about 71 and change on it. That's a little bit wider spread on a bid ask, and you'll see some others. I'll show you some other screens. You'll see what I mean. Okay, now, one-year estimated target, don't believe that. That's some loser who doesn't actually invest. If he invested and he could target, he would not be wasting his time working for a company called Yahoo. So you're going to make your own assessments, not listen to some idiotic analyst who's probably no better than you can be. Beta. Beta is a metric of risk that we will talk about a lot in this class, and it's good to start out knowing what it is. Beta does not measure all risk, because you should not expect a reward for some risk you bear. The risk that you should not be rewarded for is called diversifiable risk. That risk can be removed in a well-diversified portfolio. If you buy naked stock, I'm going to buy some stock, shares of a stock to start my investing life, you are the dumbest ass on earth, because you are going to bear a huge amount of risk. most of the risk in the stock will be that risk that you could have gotten rid of if you had just put that stock into a well-diversified portfolio. Therefore, no market is going to provide you with any pity if you get slammed into the earth on all that diversifiable, otherwise known as non-systematic risk. Beta does not measure that because that is risk that is taken on by stupid investors. Beta measures the risk that you cannot shake out. In a well-diversified portfolio, this is the risk that remains after that non-systematic risk is smoothed out. Beta is relative to the market portfolio. The market portfolio would be a theoretical portfolio of every stock in the world, each stock in the portfolio in its proportion to its weight in the world's economy. The market portfolio, you don't even have to worry about it. There are some indices, like you can buy certain types of investment instruments that mimic the S&P 500. That is awfully close to a market portfolio right there. But the point here is that beta is always relative to the market portfolio, which is one. So when I see that Target has a beta of 0.64, the way I interpret that is that in a well-diversified portfolio, Target has about 64% of the volatility of the market portfolio. 64% of the non-diversifiable risk, the systematic risk of the market portfolio. One is 100%, so the market portfolio has 100% of the market portfolio's risk. Now, a beta can be zero. A beta of zero would be a riskless instrument in a well-diversified portfolio. Treasury bills are beta zero. Beta zero, a treasury bill. Because there's no risk. The government's going to pay you back. It'll print more money if it has to, raise taxes to pay you back, or we'll just attack another country and take its assets and destroy everyone in the country forever. Well, we'll pay you back. So a beta of zero, that would be the riskless. And so you should get the risk-free rate for a beta zero. You should get the expected return to the market if you have a beta of one. So here we have a stock that would be relatively, it's hard to say. This would be a relatively safer stock. This would be one where you would probably want investors who are in the defensive part of their lives. Look, for a person like you, you're young. Okay, so you could take more risk because you'd have time to recover if your risks turned out to be punishing you. An older investor would probably not want risk. That investor is going to want more certainty. An older investor would probably like stocks that pay a big dividend. They don't reinvest a lot in risky projects. A younger investor would probably be one who wants you're not so interested in the dividend. You want the company to plow money back into the operations, take chances on capital gains. In other words, the two ways you make money off of stock, dividends, and capital gains, stock price going up. So you would probably be a little bit less interested in a stock like this, but I don't know about that. So the first question that I would pose to you in this regard, what would you say your beta is? What beta are you? Huh? Well, do you know your astrological sign? Yeah, but do you know your beta?
Cancer.
I know, I'm a Cancer too, but I also know my beta. You see, the beta is going to shape your investment decisions. It actually has more relevance. So give me a stab. What kind of a beta lady are you? I'll let you think about it. It's kind of difficult. Madam, what kind of a beta person are you? Well, let's take a stab at it. Are you a risk taker? Are you a risk avoider? What do you say?
Avoider.
Avoider. So tell me, just give me a stab at a beta that would make sense to you then. actually, that's not bad. That's a defensive position, something of a less risk. You don't want to take quite as much risk as the market itself, but you also don't want a paltry return like a treasury. You would probably be investing. What you do is you build a portfolio, and the portfolios, the betas of the individual securities work out like a weighted average. So I could probably put this beta, some target in there, maybe something that had betas around 1, 1.1, just kind of stack different ones so that you got something around a portfolio weighted average beta of about 0.8. What about you? What kind of a beta guy are you?
I'm not really a risk taker either, so I'd say probably 0.8.
Yeah, okay. Now, you look like a rambling kind of guy, you know, Bruce Springsteen, gotta stay hungry, and all that kind of stuff. What do you say? What kind of beta are you?
0.9.
Interestingly enough, our experience in financial planning is that we find that, contrary to our expectations, contrary to what I just told you a few minutes ago, we do find that younger investors are rather more defensive than we would expect them to be. We also find, just looking at when financial planners go and talk to new clients, well, we've already got a portfolio, and they look at it, they find that these portfolios have surprisingly higher betas, 1.2, 1.4. That's some serious risk-taking by people who probably should not be taking those kinds of risks, but we see them doing it. And interestingly enough, we see younger investors, whom we would think would be risk takers, being surprisingly defensive in their positions these days. By the way, interestingly enough, betas above 1 are considered relatively risky. Get up about 1.4, 1.6, you're getting into some serious risk. You're getting a lot of volatility, of non-diversifiable volatility. And zero is a completely risk-free interest instrument. Interestingly enough, there are betas that are negative, not hugely negative. We find that negative betas, what that would mean is essentially we call those contrarian securities. They have one a good example would be something like gold mining stocks. Tend to have negative betas. I can show you screens of different betas, and I will do that somewhat later in the course, where you'll see gold stocks that are involved in gold mining, gold acquisition, they tend to run counter to the market. So if you're someone who always thinks the market is wrong, you would probably be a contrarian investor. Oddly enough, well, not oddly, there are mutual funds that actually form their portfolios in negative beta territory. So if you're a contrarian and you don't want to spend the money to build your own portfolio, you can buy mutual funds that are negative beta. But that's kind of an odd thing. Okay, here we go. Days range, 7008 to 7187. So right now, it's a little closer to its downstroke, but it's pretty much in the middle of its range right now for the day. That's not telling me much right there. 52-week range is a little, well, I shouldn't say that. It's actually a little closer to its low end on the 52-week than it is to its high end. You're looking at all of this information. I can't give you one number that tells you how to invest. What I can do is give you the strength to look at all of the numbers and shape your own judgment. Not your own opinion, your own judgment. Volume on target today has been light. On average, volume is about 5.7 million shares, 3.9 for the day, light volume. In other words, the investors, for the most part, are just saying, stay back, let's just see what happens next with this stock. Maybe with other stocks, too. Here's a big one, market cap. You take the price per share times the number of common stock shares outstanding. That is the market cap. In other words, the market cap is the market's assessment of the equity value of this corporation. The markets right now assessment of the equity value of that corporation. Now, remember when I talk about the market, what I'm talking about is millions of trades, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of the most sophisticated computers and analysts on earth, with access to information that is mind-boggling in its scope and its depth. This is the market's assessment. This will not be the equity value on the financial statements in the balance sheet. It'll be way, that's what we call book. Book is irrelevant to an investor. Even the ratio market to book, take the market value divided by the book value, that's irrelevant to us. We don't care what the book value is. The market's wrong. Oh, goody. Go kick the market in the ass. Go tell the market it's wrong. In other words, what I'm trying to tell you here is don't try to fight markets. Don't think you know more than the market does, because the market is not a knowing thing. It is just an animal. It goes on its own track. It is completely driven by survival and greed. Don't try to play anything. I learned as a consultant, do not get in the way of greed and the hunger to survive. You will end up dead. P.E. ratio. I'm going to have to show you another one, because right now the price earnings per share on this company are negative. In other words, Target has lost, is right now, according to its latest financial statements, the total net income, the money available to shareholders, divided by the number of shares outstanding, is the earnings per share. So on a per share basis, the investors are down $1.11 right now for the... Now, the dividend yield, this is actually kind of an interesting one. This is what your dividend check is going to be here, $2.24 a year, divided by the price you pay for the share. In other words, in a sense, this is just what your fairly certain earnings are going to be from the stock. I pay $70.69 a share. I will get a check for $2.24. So it's like a passbook savings account. It's a 2.24%. That's actually not bad, considering how bad your regular account savings account is. I mean, that doesn't count capital gains. And it also assumes that the dividend is going to stay stable. Now, here's a quick thing about that. In my consulting days, I did very small companies. There was more than one occasion when they said, well, we have been yelled at by the investors over and over to start declaring a dividend. It's a terrible thing to start, in the sense that, look, you're giving money to your investors that you could reinvest in the corporation on their behalf. So right there you're saying, we don't think we can do as well as you can with this money that we've earned for you. The second thing is that once you start paying a dividend, you had damn well better keep paying that dividend. Oh, well, we didn't do so well this year, so we're going to not declare a dividend. Are you nuts? The market will slaughter your stock, beat it into the ground, and send it home to Jesus if you do that. You are stuck paying that dividend. Worse yet, that dividend, the market will expect that the dividend not only is always going to be paid, but it is also going to grow year over year. 5% growth of the dividend, 7%, 2%, whatever. It's not just that you're going to have to start paying a dividend. You're going to have to keep paying it, and you're going to have to grow that dividend year over year. You decided that when you finished up here, you were going to work at Walmart. Okay? Well, at least you're working at a job. Okay? But 30 years from now, I'm your old father. You still working at Walmart? Well, yeah, Dad. What are you making? Still making minimum wage, Dad. You asshole! I paid for this education! You see, you're expected to grow. And once the market sees that you have declared that you are mature enough as a company to pay a dividend, it's not enough for you to show that you can still have that job. You have to show that you can grow out of where you started. Follow the idea there? So we keep an eye on that dividend there on a company. If that dividend slips, that's bad. If it doesn't grow, that's bad too. Anyway, try something a little, another company. Any in mind? We'll look at Apple. Apple, AAPL. Start out. We're going to work on it here. I want you to give me some information. Start with you. If you bought it right now, what would you pay for it?
$93.54.
Look at that. What the heck? Do you see that? The price that they're popping right now is underneath both the bid and the ask. That stock just took a whack. What the hell was that about? Wow. Do you see that? Okay, the stock just dropped by about $6 and change. Do you see that right now? And so right now, the stock price is below the bid and the ask on it. You would probably end up still paying $93.59 on that, I'm thinking. I see where you got that, your number, obviously. But you might be surprised that they say, well, they're still asking $93.59. That's the best I could buy it at for you. And you say, wait a minute, I'm looking at a screen that says it's $93.42 right now. Hard to tell. But anyway, okay. Can you tell me about the overnight? What happened overnight to this stock? What were investors thinking overnight with this stock? Can you see that from here?
Eased off and went down.
Yeah. There was apparently some news that was a little on the negative side, and so you had some selling pressure right on the open on the opening bell, and that caused the price to slide from where it had closed the day on the day previous. Okay, now, I want you to tell me the beta of this stock. High risk, low risk, what kind of stock is this in a well-diversified portfolio? What do you see? What's the beta? Tell me what it is.
Something.
I know, I can't even see that from up here. It's a little 1.09, is that what that is? 1.06. Okay, what do you assess on that? Okay. What's the beta of the market portfolio? What's the beta of the market portfolio? That theoretical animal. It's exactly one. By definition, the market portfolio is the market portfolio. So it has 100% of the risk of the market portfolio. This stock has a beta just slightly above that. So would you say that's a risky or a not risky stock, or sort of like in the middle? Say in the middle. Because at one, this stock is almost like the market portfolio itself, at least in a well-diversified portfolio. Apple almost reflects market volatility perfectly. It's not more volatile than the market. It's not less volatile. It's a tiny bit more volatile than the market. Okay? It's essentially this stock, this company is so huge that it almost reflects the macro economy. That's kind of scary in a way. Okay, EPS, the trading range today, it swung about $3 and change over the day. So that's actually a lot. That's kind of like $3 on $90. That'd be about, 3% swing over the day. And I'm just talking to you like we do in this business. If you don't get everything I'm saying, that's how we work. It's just like learning a language. You're going to hear a lot more than you understand right at first, but you get used to it. Volume, geez. Okay, talk to me. What's volume? What do you see about the volume on this thing? What do you see? Look at the volume of the stock today versus the average volume on the stock. About three times. So in other words, some investors are all kinds of excited about something that's going on. Are they excited in a good way or are they excited in a bad way? What's the stock doing?
It's going down.
So are they excited in a good way or are they excited in a bad way? Yeah. So I can see that the volume is heavy on it. That volume looks like it is on balance, seriously, to the downside. So this stock is, investors are bailing on this stock right now. That doesn't mean that it's Apple's going to go out of business. No, no. What it means is that information has come through. And that information, you're never going to beat information. It is impounded in the stock price so fast that you almost would not have a chance to jump in. We're talking about giant funds and trusts and investment bankers and rich people running in a herd away on sells. The sells are beating the buys pretty heavily. Market cap. Talk to me. Market cap.
The market equity, or the estimated equity.
Not estimated. Okay. No, don't ever say to the market, you're estimated. They'll slap you around.
They think that Apple's equity is about $517 billion.
About a half a trillion dollars, this company. Now, what are you worth?
A lot less than that.
Considerably, son.
Yes.
You are worth so much less than that. And everyone in this room and everyone in this town, everyone in this state, you put all of us together, the present value of our future expected earnings, we ain't diddly squat compared to this corporation. Together with several other monsters, they are essentially the global economy in and of themselves. We had laws to try to keep this from ever happening. Even the great free market economist Adam Smith, the one place he said we should never go is to allow companies this large to ever exist anywhere because of the detriment they would have to the economy, to efficiency of operations and production. And yet here we are. This company on its own is half a trillion dollars. On its own, larger than the GDPs of most of the nations on Earth. Earnings per share on this. This company on a per share basis made $9.22 for its investors. Now, some of that went to a dividend, $2.08 of it went to a dividend. And then the rest, about $7.14, was plowed back into operations on a per-share basis. Do you see where I got that? They paid each of their investors on each share $2.08 out of what they had $9.22 available. So in other words, for each investor's share of the earnings of this company, the net income, was $2.08. Then the rest would be what they plowed back into the operations. Now notice that on a percentage basis, essentially you pay $93.42 over a year. This dividend will earn you 2.05% return. In addition, you will, if the stock goes up in price and you sell the stock from what you bought it at, you will earn capital gain. But that's speculative. Now, price-to-earnings ratio. P.E. is what it says, the price per share divided by the earnings per share. So in other words, it would be $93.42 divided by $9.22. Essentially, what P.E. does, it's a multiple. It doesn't have any units with it. It tells you how many dollars investors are willing to pay to claim $1 of earnings of the company currently. Again, the P/E ratio tells us how many dollars investors are willing to pay in stock price to claim $1 of current earnings in the corporation. Another way of putting that, is that this is the market's assessment of how much an equity holder would see generated in earnings for every $1 the company has earned currently. Again, let me say that again. This is kind of intense territory. You get used to it. Don't sweat it if it's not coming through right away. But essentially, when I buy this stock, the P/E ratio is saying, I anticipate, that's a 10, that $1 of earnings of money available to shareholders now that the company's going to use will turn into, in present value terms, in right now dollars, $10 of earnings in the future. Now, P/E ratio can be considered like a risk measure. I don't care for it as much as I do beta, but essentially the higher the P/E ratio, the more dollars you're paying now for a buck of earnings. So, I mean, back in my time, a 10 was a little scary. But these days, I mean, you see P/E ratio 30, 50. Oh, hell, back when the Nikkei was going skyrocketing years ago, there were P/E ratios of 10,000. Investors were essentially paying $10,000 to claim $1 of current earnings. It's just insane. You got to be careful with that P/E ratio. It's not a great measure, but it does tell you, by the P/E measure, this is not a very risky stock. And the beta kind of confirms that. This stock is about as risky as the market itself. Essentially, putting this stock in a well-diversified portfolio, it would contribute essentially just about as much risk as the market itself was causing. And you would expect out of this stock about as much as you would expect from the market portfolio itself. So if you think the market portfolio is going to earn you 14%, that's probably about what you're going to get out of this stock too. Now, let me do another one. I'm going to do another biggie here real quick. Another biggie real quick. Google. Well, there you go. You decide you're going to buy Google. You're going to buy Google. How much are you going to pay, not counting your broker's fees?
$713.
Huh? No. Actually, you're going to be paying $71,400. You should have bought it. It just went up. $71,478. Round lot. Remember?
All right.
Yeah, we talk about price per share, but I mean, your broker, you call your broker, I'd like to buy one share of Alphabet Inc., Google. And he's going to say, you dumbass, they're going to charge you over $1,000 for a share. Have you seen that service that sells you one share that you can gift to someone else? There's these companies that do that. You know, you've got a nephew and you want him to learn investing, you buy him a share of stock. That's the stupidest ass thing on earth to do. Stupidest thing on earth to do that. Because you're going to pay a huge premium for a single share of stock. And he's probably just going to throw it in a drawer and then make $1 billion after you die or something. But anyway. Notice, interestingly enough, earnings per share on Google is monstrous, $23. So in other words, there's probably not a whole lot of Google out there. $23.72. Dividend and yield. Okay, dividend and yield. I want you to tell me, what do you see there on that screen for the dividend and the yield?
N-A.
And what does that mean?
They don't pay dividends.
Oh, I love it when you talk dirty. That's exactly right. This company plows all of its earnings back into the company, which should drive up the stock price. So on that measure, is this a low risk or a high risk stock? They don't give you any money. All your money is going to be made.
Pretty high risk because you're betting on them. Entirely.
That's exactly right. That's the thing. So you see, by looking at different measures, the profile is actually not clear on any stock. And if anyone says, well, everything's telling horse crap, that's the whole point of what I'm doing here, is showing you that you have to be nuanced and you have to think about the different metrics. On the measure of beta, it's a middling stock. It's about as risky as investing in the market portfolio. It's right around a 1.0. Okay, by the price earnings ratio, that's actually a fairly modest PE ratio in today's world, really. But on the dividend, that tells me a different story, that this is a stock that the only way you're going to make money is if they take your money that you have as residual claim after all the debt holders have been paid, and they're going to put that money into something, and it's going to make the stock goes up. So you know what that means? If someday, every Mackie in the world wakes up and realizes what a dumbass they are, Apple's dead. But as long as they have that Mackie, those Macintosh freaks, that mass of people who every time there is a fart of an iPhone, they buy the fart as an app for the new iPhone. Oh, it's white this time. That's what this is relying on, is a complete devotion of a hardcore consumer market that will never abandon them. Well, maybe that's low risk. Maybe it's not. Who knows? One last one. Let's get something that's a little more. You want to call up something else? Let me show you. Say it. State Barn? Are they a mutual or are they a stock company now? State Farm. I almost wrote Barn. These are mutual funds. No, it's still mutual. These are funds. Yeah. Something else? Well, let me do this one real quick before we get over to financial statement. Berkshire Hathaway A. There's your stock. You ready to buy a round lot of that son of a bitch? That's one share. That's that creepy old weirdo Warren Buffett's company. That's 189,000. Are you on crack? Oh, and $91. Oh man, that thing fell by $549. Whoa. But that was only about a quarter of a percent. Look at that thing. A round lot of that, what would a round lot of that be? About $19 million with your brokerage fee. I'm sure they give you a discount on the brokerage fee for that buy order. But God, I just want to show you that. That's also, there's something really creepy ass about that. Look at the beta. It's zero. It's a riskless security. Essentially, that's a treasury. That gives you an idea of what's kind of creepy about this world, is that there are companies that are essentially so large that they are mimicking the market itself, and there are companies that are so powerful that there is no risk in a diversified portfolio from buying. They are essentially governments. They are the government in their own private world. And they don't even pay a dividend. Now, does that piss you off? You'd think they'd give you at least a dollar a share dividend if you're going to buy that much, pay that much. They don't even pay a dividend. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, enough of that. Can you give me another stock, just a normal stock? Cat. That ought to be a funny thing to see. Oh, hey. You can see that the whole market is down, and Cat's down too. Notice its beta. The beta on Caterpillar. Beta on Caterpillar. I want to see from up here. Call it out, madam. Is that is Cat higher risk or lower risk? I know, right? It gets kind of dim up here. Higher risk or lower? Oh, are your glasses dirty? Here. Oh, sorry. What do you see? Don't say that. I know you want to, but don't say it. Okay, what do you see there? as far? Is it relatively high or relatively low? What do you see? It's kind of in the middle, but it's a little above the market. Do you see that the market would be a, investing in the market portfolio would be exactly a one. This is about 116% of the non-diversifiable risk of the market portfolio. So it's a little riskier, relatively speaking, than the market portfolio. So this would be something that you would either, if you wanted to balance this, you wanted something that was a low-risk portfolio, you'd probably want to get some betas well below one. Or if you are going to create a portfolio, higher risk, higher expected return, you didn't want it to go clear, totally risky. This might be the kind of betas that you would put into a portfolio that was a little bit riskier, but not insanely risky. Okay? So, day's range, nothing spectacular there. The spread, see the bid-ask spread? It's kind of a wide spread, but you're going to sell your shares. If you want to sell your shares, you're going to sell them for about 58 and a quarter. If you want to buy shares, you're going to sell them at 58 and three quarters. So there's about a spread there on the bid ask of about 50 cents. That's more normal. Market cap, average volume. Oh, here we go. Average volume on this one. What do you see about the volume today, as opposed to the volume in general? Huh? There's no dollars, it's the volume. How many shares? How many shares traded today?
6,000.
No, 10,000. The volume today is 10,000, almost 11,000. That's what they mean by that. That's why I was checking. I'm not expecting you to know. I'm checking to see if you're catching it. But on average, this stock on a given average day over the last year or so has been about 6.6 million shares. So there is more activity on this stock today than there is in general. And that activity has been to the downside. Notice that the drop as a percentage, 1.42%, is a little stronger than the drop that I saw on the S&P 500 or the Dow. Again, somewhat reflecting that beta. This stock is a little bit more sensitive than the market itself is, and it's on the downstroke. P/E ratio, 12, a little higher than where we were before. Earnings per share, 486. Look at that dividend per share, 308. You see that this company actually threw most of its earnings back to its shareholders. Do you see that? On a per share basis, it earned $4.86 for each share of stock outstanding. It gave $3.08 of that back as dividends. So this company's plowback ratio is only about a fourth. A fourth of the money that it earns for shareholders, it reinvests in the company for shareholders. The rest, it's just giving back to them. Essentially saying, here, it's yours. We wouldn't know what to do to make you money off our company anymore anyway. So on that measure, this company is actually quite low risk. I wouldn't expect a lot of movement upward on the stock, because they're not putting a lot of their own money, the money the shareholders, they've earned for the shareholders, they're just giving it back. Here's your damn money. We don't know what to do with it. Well, don't you have anything you can invest it in? You know, some kind of something new, something cool, some big tractor or something? No, we just can't think of anything. That's what that's saying. That's a lower risk profile. And yet the beta is telling us a slightly different story, that this is a higher risk company. You put those two together and think about it for a little bit. How could a company have one measure? They're not reinvesting. So that's a lower risk company. You're going to get $3 out of this stock every 5.05. That's like old fashioned savings accounts. You pay $58.32 a share. You're going to get over a year a 5% return, a check for 5% of that. Hopefully every year, maybe even a little better if the dividend grows. That's kind of an odd situation. How could that possibly be? A stock that is more volatile in a well-diversified portfolio than the market itself, And yet, this is a company that's no longer really putting a lot of its shareholders' money back into the company itself. Put those two together and think about how that could possibly happen. You can go through one after the other after the other, but I want to take you back now over to a resource. All financial services, these reporting services, draw their numbers, and almost every analyst draws its substrate of information from one place. Every company has to, public company has to file reports with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Those reports are of different kinds, but the big 800-pound gorillas are the 10-Qs, quarterly reports, and at the end of every year, the 10-K, an annual report, with the SEC. Those reports have tons of narrative information, written out information. They also have the financial statements. The annuals are audited financial statements. They are in a form nowadays that financial information can be just slurped up by all these other reporting services like Yahoo and Google and the finance, MSN Finance and all those others. So when you look at those other services, you might as well go to the horse's mouth. For one thing, some of those services glitch and the numbers don't come out the right. I made a mistake of about five, no, it's been more recent than that. I was hard up one day and I was already in Yahoo and I pulled up the financial statements in Yahoo, the company's financial statements. And I just rolled through some numbers. Here's the ratio and all that. Kind of wasting people's time. You can calculate those without me showing you. But I thought, well, that's an odd number there. And that night, I went to the SEC site, which is called EDGAR, and looked at the numbers again. Ah, the reporting service is not picking up the right number. So wrong that the number that Yahoo was reporting was zero, and the actual number was about $4 million. And I noticed that that's a persistent glitch in interest expense, that a lot of these services reported flatline zero, and it ain't a flatline zero. So you might as well go to this source. Now, more background. Filing these reports is one of the biggest pains in the ass of being a public company. Even more of a pain in the ass now with all of these self-righteous laws like Sarbanes-Oxley and Dodd-Frank. You must report this and this. A lot of it is just killing smaller companies. My back is almost broken just by the reporting requirements. Giant corporations have three or four levels of their skyscrapers with lawyers and accountants to do it. Littler companies are just being destroyed by what's happening right now. But we have to do it. Now, we file these forms, and I was doing for companies for years. That was one of my bread and butter. Now they won't let me do it because I'm not a lawyer. So I would be breaking the law if I did it. But it was always these big, thick paper forms. The 10-K was a nightmare of typing and typing. And then came the first of the electronic system, EDGAR. And I became an EDGAR filing agent. It was all electronic. Instead of sending the SEC a big, thick form, you went into an electronic service and you put these tags around the different information items, specialized tags. And then the SEC got it, and they'd say, okay, you did it. No paper. It's become so sophisticated now that what is in the EDGAR filing system is all electronic. Let me show you what I mean. This is very useful to you because you will be required by some of your professors to write research papers. This is an incredible resource that every smart analyst will use. Looking at these filings by these companies. Remember, the companies are not going to lie in these filings if they can possibly avoid it, simply because if they get caught, especially now, the executives are going to be the old ladies of hard timers at a federal facility. So you go SEC.gov. I always come in this way. I should remember the URL of the AXA site. And you go to filings up here, Edgar Search Tools, company or fund name. Now I do, you gotta, again, you gotta be careful when you just type in the company name, because one company can have the same name for a lot of different things that it's doing. Sears just drives you crazy trying to figure out if I type in Sears, watch what happens if I just type in Sears. Look at all these different possible things. I mean, that's why I encourage you to make sure you know the trading symbol, because then you can use the right, you can hit the company right on the head. I'm going to use Target, TGT. Now, let me go through a couple of forms real quick. The money forms are the Qs and Ks, the 10Qs and the 10Ks. There is another form that is actually kind of useful, the 8Ks. I used to make, actually, kind of like my living as a consultant was on the 8Ks. You file an 8K as a public corporation every time there is a non-recurring event. The Qs and Ks are recurring, quarterly, annual, every year. But if something happens that is outside of the ordinary course of business, you have to file an 8K. You were walking along. You're the president of Megacorp International. You were walking out in a farm field, and a UFO came along and sucked you up into the UFO and abducted you. I have to file an 8K. As the agent for the company, that's a non-recurring event. Had we ever had one of our executive officers abducted by an alien? No, I don't think so. So this is not recurring? No. So I have to file an 8K. Okay? You are the chief financial officer, and you have a heart attack and die. Does that happen often to you? Probably once. Okay. I know, right? Once was enough. So I file an 8K, a non-recurring event. Anytime, the way I made money off this was I did these little tiny corporations. They were just barely alive. I'd help them go public, or they had contacted me after they went public and they were in way over their heads with filings and all that. But these companies had these insiders. Now, insiders have common stock. And they can sell some of their common stock, but only during certain time windows. They can sell only certain amounts and at certain times. So what these guys would do, the scammers, and even some of the more legits, they would try to time it so that they gave press releases about incredible things the company was doing shortly before their window opened when they could sell some of their stock. The old term for it was pump and dump. They would pump the stock up, and then once the window opened, the stock would have a higher price. They would dump, stock price would collapse, their window would close, and they could buy dinner. In a lot of cases, it was just pure scam. But in other cases, I mean, the companies couldn't even pay these guys their salaries, so this was the only way they could make their money. But anytime they did one of these press releases, an 8K had to be filed. So I knew that when those windows opened a few weeks before, sure enough, I was going to be seeing some press releases, and I charged. I was filing in the electronic system by that time. I had gotten to be masterful at it. $50. So I had, at one point, I had like 8 clients and a press release for each of them. There was $400 for me right there. I knew, was kind of certain that I was going to have that money. So the 8Ks are worth looking at to see what kinds of events are happening. But not just that. You also ask, what does this event mean for the company's financial future? By the time you see the information, it's probably a day or two old on the 8K, maybe even older than that if you haven't been there for a while. But what you do can ask is, okay, he died. Well, actually, he kind of sucked as a CFO. I mean, matter of fact, he was an idiot. Oh, that would be something that I might see as a buy signal, something where I would, he died. You... Well, usually these abductions don't last for very long, and they bring you back. But I mean, you are so, most people, they are so messed up from what happened, you know? So here we're going to have you come back, still the CEO, and you're going to be talking about how you were abducted by aliens. And you're going to talk about the experiments, and they also took some cows up with you and what you saw done to the cows. And it's going to be like all you can do sometimes is just walk around. Okay? So, real finance for real people. So that might be a sales, because, I mean, you're still the CEO, but I mean, you've become particularly and inappropriately sensitive to the suffering of cows. And you're in the meatpacking business, so that makes it even worse. Okay? Where the hell was I? Okay. Look, go down here, find the last 8K for Target. Find the last 8K. Now, in the you can look in the book, and I'll show you a few. First class next week, I'll do a few ratios for you. But I mean, it's not that hard to do ratio analysis. But let me show you something that's very extremely cool. First of all, the 10K has financial statements, but it has a ton of narrative information. And if you read that, you'll find that the company is very glib, very honest. There's a section of it, and in fact, even the textbook, your textbook talks about this, called the MD&A, the Management Discussion and Analysis. I mean, the company is just blunt as hell about what's going on. Well, yeah, we tried this, and it didn't work, or we see these prospects right here. They're not promoting in this document. The SEC isn't going to let them do promo advertisement. They're being honest. So if you read that MD&A, and it's kind of long and dry sometimes, but man, you will get so much inside information. Right there. It's right there for everyone, but not many people read it. For your reports, you have a prof. Well, where the hell did you get this about the company? From the 8K. You want to challenge it, bitch? Don't say that for a guy. But do you see that what I'm saying, though, is that's like original documentation. It's the closest you can come to talking to the company officials themselves. It is unassailable as if you cite that in a report that you're writing for a class. Also, you're thinking about where you're going to have your first job. Read that. You might decide that's a great company. You like what they're doing. You see prospects. Or you might realize, geez, I think that might not be such a good idea. So it's not just the financials, it's the other things. But the financials are here. Let me go take you back one screen. You find the most recent 8K and click interactive data. Now I want you to notice, here's the financial statements, okay? Look here, see this? View Excel document. You can download all of the financial statements as an XLS spreadsheet. Some of these have like 20 tabs, income statement, the balance sheet, the statement of retained earnings, the statement of cash flows, their structure of debt, their structure of equity. It's all there. You can download it and then do whatever you want. Make charts out of it, play with it. It's just like all public companies now have to do this, and there it is, all of this information already in a format so that you can use it for, like I said, making graphs and charts, for doing trend analysis and all that, right there. But we'll look at it right here. Consolidated statements of operations. Now, understand something. Financial statements will use, different companies will use different terms for the same thing. So even at the level of saying consolidated statements of operations, some companies might say, call that something else. So you might have to, I've made a fool of myself a few times in class of where the hell is the income statement? Well, we used to call it different company. And inside of these financial statements, the same thing will be called different things by different companies. Like for example, one important one is called operating income. But it's also in some financial statements called earnings before interest and taxes. Also, some companies say revenue. Some companies say sales. So know that there are different words in these. There's a certain lack of standardization. Consolidated statements of operations. There's something I want to make a point here, really important. One thing that I've noticed about the SEC, and I don't know why they don't bitch about this, is that there is a line, and I'm seeing this in a lot of income statements, There's a line that is not there that's really important to us in financial analysis. And I'm not talking just about investment. I'm not even talking just about jobs. Any supplier worth his salt is going to look at the financial statements of a company to know whether it's worth having that company as a client. Believe me, there are jobs that I have helped students get where they're, what they do is they look at the financial statements of companies that want to become suppliers for them, and they'll peel these apart. But right there, up at the top, you got your total revenues, okay? 72 for the most recent period, 72,618. Cost of sales, 51,278. There's a line missing there, and I'm seeing it in so many of these financial statements. It's you taking the revenue minus the cost of goods sold. Cost of goods sold is basically your wholesale. It's costs that you can peg right to a product, a thing you sold. So essentially, retail minus wholesale, we call that gross income. And they don't show that line. It's like a calculation line. But believe me, I am very interested in seeing how much is left over of every dollar that they sell minus what they paid for their products. They show the two numbers that make it, 72,618 and 72,618 and 51,278. But they don't show what 72,618 minus 51,278 is. So in other words, they're not showing how much is left over to pay things like light bills and all of that after they've paid their wholesale prices. It's just one thing you might want to insert a line and do that calculation. Because we, but anyway, going down the line really quickly here, just for a few minutes. Below the cost of sales line, those are called SG&A, selling, general, and administrative expenses. Nothing big there. Essentially, all the expenses that you can't put on a given sale, but they are costs nonetheless. In my business, I'm a professional landscape photographer. I have a cost that I can put right on my artwork, the cost of the frame and the mat and the museum glass. But there are also all these other costs, like the cost of the inks. How I can't put an exact cost on how much ink went into one print. The cost of the paper. I might throw away three before I get a perfect print that is sellable. The cost of my website. The costs, all these other costs. I can't put right on something. So I might have something that sells for, I've got one that I'm building right now. It's going to sell for $800. The cost of it, the frame and the glass and the mat, will run about $500. So that's 800 minus 500. That 500 would be cost of goods sold. But then there are all these diffuse costs that would be down there below that top three lines, those top lines. Okay. No, it's not going to cost me $500. It's going to cost me $300. I'm going to pull $500 as my gross income on that. Okay, now, important right here, net interest expense. At this line right here, earnings before, and see, they're calling it earnings from continuing operations before interest expense and tax, income taxes. We commonly call that operating income, or we call it earnings before interest and taxes, EBIT. Okay, they're calling it something a little fancier here. Same thing. Again, it can have different names for different companies. Now, here's their interest expense. Here's a very important, hugely important point. What would happen if the net interest expense was bigger than the line just above it? Earnings available to pay interest. What would happen? Well, be specific. If you remember what I said the second day of class, what happens if you can't pay your debt holders? I want you to repeat after me. They will shoot your dog.
They will shoot your dog.
Sell your Bible on Craigslist.
Sell your Bible on Craigslist.
And make your mama wear furry costumes that please them.
And make your mama wear furry costumes that please them.
And Mrs. Fox is a great starter outfit.
And Mrs. Fox.
Mrs. Fox. And you are not Mr. Panda Bear. Okay, if that line, net interest expense, is bigger than the line above it, the company is automatically dead. So we want distance. We want to see a lot of money available to pay the interest. Because if you don't pay your interest on your debt, your company is in technical default right there. And no, the debt holders are not going to miss it. They will see it the day you can't pay your interest, and they will shut you down. So you want that one. And then you go down there to the bottom, and there's the rest of it. Now, what I'm going to do first thing on Monday is show you a little more about the financial statements to finish off chapter 2. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.